Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Ocala, the OBS 2-year-old in training sale, the first training sale of the year. Good morning, everybody, from the now brightly lit pavilion just outside the new pavilion. Happy to be with you as the sale season kicks off. The 2-year-olds that'll be tomorrow's stars. They will start going through the ring in about 90 minutes, and the nice, steady buzz of activity around the barns this morning. Some final, at least for the ones that are going to go through the ring today. You got a little less than 300 hips both days, and then after the outs, probably 220 horses or so that'll sell today. And hips 1 through 288. Been watching and spent a nice portion of yesterday and then this morning already with my friend Aaron Yagoda. And Aaron's got a Justin Philip colt that is absolutely going to be a day one standout just based on traffic and based on scoping and all kinds of prodding and poking, as it were. In fact, we had a nice and interesting discussion about that aspect. Last night, Hammer, who has got ahead to the airport this morning, heading back to California and flying out of Tampa, got to be there noonish. So Hammer's on his way. And Sid Fernando is on his way as well, but is going to be... Yeah, he's looking. In fact, I just heard from him. He had a little hiccup, so he did not make the trip last night. So Sid will only be here later this afternoon. So we will miss Sid, unfortunately, which is too bad. But last night, I had a conversation with Hammer, and Aaron came to dinner, as well as Tom Ventura. Tom's going to join us at the top of hour two. And one of the things that, and I never really thought about it until I watched it happen yesterday with Aaron's and Pat Hopple's hip 81, the Justin Philip colt that went 9-4, and has got a nice page, Phipps family, and all kinds of nice, nice blood involved as well as what he did in the Breeze Show and how he presents himself. But how about the scoping? And the vets come with the machine, with the with the narrow cord that is snaked down the nose, and to look at the airway, and you figure you're gonna get that done a few times. How about yesterday? This colt was scoped 9 times, and then this morning already I was over there and he got scoped another 3 times, and it wasn't 8:30. And, the horses, we talked about this a little bit with Kelly Breen yesterday and with Becky Thomas. The horses, they'll put up with a lot. they are patient up to a certain point, and it's testing. And, we talked about horses being taken out of the stall over and over and over and over and again, and being walked back and forth. And this happens to be a dark, almost a black colt. And so when it's sunny, today it is not. It is overcast and a little misty. The sun broiling down, it's going to be tough. So I asked Tom Ventura. He said, why can't there be a repository for a video of the scoping, of the check of the airway? And they said, I guess they tried that years ago, and it didn't it didn't take because everybody wants their own vet. Number one, they want their own vet who advises them. They want their own vet to provide his view. And there was concern, and I guess this makes sense. Tom said, you know, obviously the consigner, you know, would want the best possible video to go into the repository. So, you know, is there a way to have one perfect taping of a scope? And is that necessarily representative? So Horace has got this thing snaked up his nose 9 times yesterday. So, God bless him. And he you know, then there's the heart monitoring, but he took it all in stride. So that's part of, you know, it's part of the sales process. And you do understand the individual, you know, individual vets, everybody has their, you know, they might have their blood stock advisors. Then they have their veterinary advisors. And, you know, there's occasions where, you know, there's certain confirmation issues, or we've talked about and we've heard conversation about flex, little particulate around the knee or the ankle. One vet will look at it and say, that should come out. Another vet will look at it and say, it should never bother him. It'll never bother him there. And it's amazing. So this is one of the things, and one vet's opinion versus another, it could be the difference between, you know, profit and loss for pinhookers and et cetera. So there's so many fascinating working parts. In fact, Aaron, I asked Aaron if he wanted to come on, and he said no, not until after the horse sells. So we may not get. Maybe we'll get him. I've been trying to cajole Aaron on for years. He's got a fascinating story, and he's pinhooked 14 horses this year of the yearling to two-year-old market, and he's had a lot of big hitters. He had American Anthem 2 years ago, and others. He's had really a steady parade of good performers, and he himself has got a good eye, and he looks at certain things differently. Partnered up very frequently with Len Green and Mike Eddie, and Mr. Green expected here today. Maybe we'll get a visit with Len. So sale day one, getting ready to kick off in just about an hour. We'll keep an eye as well on the Becky Thomas that we discussed yesterday with her, and that is hip. I want to say hip 39. Is that right? No, that's the American Pharoah. The Tappet. I will find it. So, because I think there's a chance that one will sell while we're still on the air. So, I'm not sure how many they'll get through. Is it hip 33, perhaps? All right, I will, on the first break, I will find it. All right, that's the sale setup, and we'll get some steady parade, I'm sure, of visitors as the the first set of visitors. We wanted to talk to Alex Lieblong, who I saw yesterday, and Alex, I think, pretty excited about some of the buzz that's going on with his The Big Beast. And The Big Beast was a little bit of a surprise in the Breeze Show, and I was talking to Lieblong while he was looking at a Big Beast. I said, you know, you can't go out and buy all of these Big Beasts. I'm sure he will support sons and daughters of the Big Beast. A couple of notes too before the first break, and of course Cheltenham getting started. And appreciate you probably just if you were listening from yesterday's broadcast, you heard the preview from Nick Luck, and I'm just pulling up the feed and see where they, because I think they got to be getting pretty close, right? It's I didn't keep the Cheltenham page. Yeah, they're 20 minutes to first post. And you know what we're going to do? We'll get a visit in with Garrett O'Rourke before things get started, because once the switch gets thrown on Cheltenham, Garrett's going to be locked in. So we're going to get to Garrett, and we'll talk about Judd Mont's terrific winter that's turning into a potential bonanza spring. And, you know, with Arrogate and his emergence, the prospects for the Judd Mont North American operation to more or less elevate itself from a breeding standpoint, that became evident. And now here they are with two emergent Bill Mott trainees. The son of Close Hatches, obviously, from Saturday at Tampa Bay, Tacitus, and Hidden Scroll, now seemingly set to go forward toward the Florida Derby. And it really is a fascinating development to me, that after all the years and you know, all the success that Bobby Frankel had, you know, and really just the one big dirt performer in Empire Maker, when you think, and Mizzen Mast, but particularly Empire Maker, to have, you know, the sort of reset that they did, and it just speaks to, you know, the way in which the operation is managed. And now to have, you know, a situation with these two, you know, seemingly, I wouldn't say locked in for Derby, but knocking on the door. I mean, Tacitus could, with the points that he sustained on Saturday, he could absolutely go in. But Bill Mott talking about one more prep. And here we have the opportunity to visit with Garrett O'Rourke. I was kind of tap dancing. Garrett, congratulations to you and Bill.
Thank you very much, Steve.
I was talking a little about with Arrogate's emergence, and when we talked about Arrogate and everything that happened with him, then to have these 3 year olds, it seems like a whole new chapter for Judd Mont. It's fascinating, really.
Well, it is. You know, it's not totally by chance. I mean, we obviously see the opportunity to win the big prizes with dirt horses. We had a lot of families that I think were more suited to turf racing than to dirt racing, but we did have some of those original pedigrees from the root mares that Prince Khalid bought, you know, going back 30 years, that were dirt families. And I think having used horses like Empire Maker and First Defense, both of, you know, they're the broodmare sires of both of these horses this year, and then adding some more dirt pedigree sires to them. I think it shouldn't be too much of a surprise. I think that these families are well capable of producing classic dirt horses as well, and hopefully that's where we are at the moment. We're still chasing the Derby, us and a lot of other people as well, but that would be nice to put that trophy on the mantelpiece at some stage.
Well, and I thought it was a fun mirthful quote of yours that talked about what the next step might be for Hidden Scroll after the Fountain of Youth try. And Andy Serling and I were kind of batting it around, and Andy speculated, said, that these are not connections that will be headlong toward Derby. And I said, well, I don't know. I said, Garrett O'Rourke said, nobody's getting any younger here from Prince Khalid to even to Bill. So I thought that was pretty telling. And then here you are, a week later, and Tacitus makes a 3-year-old debut in a high level spot, and gets a wonderful ride, and gets through traffic, and anoints himself a major player.
Yes, and I think you've got to put yourself in the position, at least, to be competitive if you're ever going to win the Derby. And I think that's what the people that have been so successful A, being competitive in the Derby, and B, winning it, that's what they've always done. And I think that planning then has to go into effect going back to, probably early to mid 2-year-old years, so that you're always, every move you make from probably... I always say if you're behind the eight ball by August of their 2-year-old year, you're probably not going to make it. So I think, just little things like when a horse gets an injury and how long you give them off, and or when you let them get over shins and you back off. I mean, these are all the things that I think the exceptional Derby trainers have done very well, and I think we've been cognizant of that and trying to point if we don't... get there, we have plenty of plan B's and C's, but I think these are the plans you got to put into effect in order to try and make it to the Derby, and we definitely have that desire.
What's really particularly notable about Tacitus and his presence here, and you look at that pedigree, and it's a testimony to the way Judd Mahon has approached the business. I mean, you look back at that female family, back to Zafonic, and then weaving in a cover of Silver Star with Stormcat to get Rising Tornado, and then your own First Defense and Rising Tornado produce Closed Hatches. Then you go outside and you bring in the potential of a Tappet for Closed Hatches for her first foal, and here you're rewarded instantly.
Yeah, this is one of the great pedigrees in the stud book. It's a pedigree that I've had tremendous admiration for since I was, I'd say, barely a teenager, thinking back to horses like Malinowski and Gielgud and, horses that were trained by Vincent O'Brien. But it's one of those few pedigrees that has been producing. So I'm talking about back in the 1970s, and a lot of pedigrees go dormant and then make comebacks, and some of them don't make any comebacks. But this pedigree has been producing classic-type horses since the 70s without ever going dormant, and we're lucky enough at Judd Mahon to have this extremely strong branch of it. But, plenty of other top breeders like Maria Niarchos and Coolmore, they all have branches of this family as well that are also doing exceptionally well. It's extremely lucrative, and we're trying to, putting horses like Tappet and Claude Satches as a really nice curling colt this year, and you're just trying to take one of the best families and put as much extra classic bloodline in there as you can, and aim for the very, very top. It's a home run pedigree.
Let's also take the opportunity to touch on Hidden Scroll and the flashy, slightly unexpected debut. Then it kind of thrust into a high profile and a difficult spot for the Fountain of Youth for his second start, and really acquitted himself just fine, and certainly deserving of another chance to earn his way into the Derby gate. Talk a little bit about him, because he's been the one that you know, that kind of came from nowhere. When you have a Tappet Close Hatches colt, there's not a burden, but there's an expectation. This one kind of came across the horizon like a comet.
Yeah, you know, he's, I will, to give him credit, he's always been a very good-looking colt from, you know, from the time he was born. He had the appearance of a two-turn, big, handsome athlete. So I would say he always fit the bill from that point of view. Probably what threw us backwards a little bit more is his dam had thrown a few good lookers, and they were okay, but they were limited in ability. This probably, you know, he was the best looking of them, but I still thought there was a possibility or even probability that he'd have a limit to his ability. But then when he started to train last year, to give credit to Bill's assistant, Kenny McCarthy, I mean, we saw it here in the farm. We sent him in. He started working very well at Churchill Downs, unfortunately, just before he was quite close to running and injured a hind splint bone, and we brought him home, gave him a short break, and got him back. And that was the first time, I think, that Bill had him in his own hands. At, you know, he was at Payson Park at the time. And Bill called Kenny at that point and said, well, you told me he was nice. You didn't tell me he was this nice. You know, but it's a very strong family as well. And when you think of the fact that, you know, he's by Hartsmon, who was second in the Derby, and he's out of an Empire Maker mare, and Empire Maker was second in the Derby. So, and then you go back to the second dam, who was a top-class racehorse. He's got plenty of classic connection. It's just that he's not out of a Close Hatches, and you know, he's not by a Tappet, he's by a good stallion. But I think that's allowed him to fall or to fly a little bit under the radar. But you know, his natural talent and natural speed is pretty exciting.
Well, the prospects of having two runners in the Derby has got to be, you know, has got to be very exciting for everybody. And, you know, I referenced Empire Maker, and that was probably shortchanging the other Judmont runner that finished second in the Derby just a couple of years before that, Aptitude. I think people forget that he was second.
Yeah, you know, our first one was going all the way back to Eltish, who people probably forget that. I mean, we brought him over to be placed in the Breeders' Cup as a juvenile, then back to England, and Henry Cecil brought him back over. But on Derby Day, he arrived in here and just didn't see, had never seen anything like the crowd that he experienced. And I think he had his race lost before it ever even started. That was a disappointment. Aptitude ran a fantastic race. But, you know, I was following him that day, and he was right behind Fusaichi Pegasus, and even though he was following him all the way and they were winding their way through the crowd all the way, there was never a point in time where I felt like he was going better than Fupeg, and ultimately couldn't pass him out. Empire Maker was the huge disappointment, because we really felt like he was the best horse in the race, and he had all the credentials, and he was kind of like a, I suppose, Easy Gore when he went in there, only with, you know, didn't run into a Sunday Silence, but at least we got Vindication in the Belmont. But it still leaves a big gaping hole for us in that spot on the mantelpiece, like I say, that we're dying to put a Derby trophy up there, or I would love to do it anyway for Prince Gallant's sake. It's one of the great races that he has yet to win.
Well, and it is notable. You bring up Eltish, and we think about Hofburg last year. Four starters in the Derby, and never worse than seventh. 2 seconds, a sixth, and a seventh. So you know that when those familiar light green and pink sash jackets make it to the Derby starting gate, that they're a serious contender. And Garrett, I'm excited to see the next round as both Tacitus and Hidden Scroll going to make starts. The Florida Derby seems set for Scroll, and could be the wood for Tacitus, and we'll watch for it. In the meantime, you mentioned the big crowds, and Cheltenham just minutes away. You got any? You got any pushes?
I wouldn't say. I'm not as big into the form there as I used to be, but I have to say now that I couldn't miss it every single year. It gives me chills to watch it. I'm over here since 1986 now. So I consider myself nearly more American than, or as American as Irish, but it's the one thing I do feel homesick, I have to say now. I grew up watching Cheltenham, and to me it's such a pure sport, and it's for people that really, really love the game, and it gives me chills. So that's the rest of my morning planned.
I love it. I love it. Well, Garrett, I appreciate this a lot, and we're fascinated by this development, and of course we hearing about the Arrogate babies, and the breeding season underway at Judmont as well, and just a whole new, really a whole new development that it's got many more chapters to write yet.
Yeah, no, I'd love to knock out the Derby this year, obviously, but, if we have to wait for some of these Arrogates to come along, they're very exciting lookers and out of exceptional mares, so, that'll be okay too, but hopefully by the time the Arrogates hit the racetrack, hopefully we're looking for our second Derby by then. How about that?
Now you're getting greedy. I love it. That's you're talking like Baffert. You'll take it, exactly.
I said hopefully.
Garrett O'Rourke. Hopefully is right. Well, I've continued success on the road, and I appreciate the visit. Enjoy Cheltenham. 3 minutes away to post for the first today, and the Supreme Novice, which happens to be a grade one, and a bulky group, as usual. You've got 17 heading postward, and the domestic numbers, let's see, 5-2 on Al Dancer, Twixton Davies combining, as well as Classical Dream, Willie Mullins, second choice, 9-2. So Cheltenham about ready to jump, and they're about ready to jump here as well at OBS, about an hour away. Let's take head for our first break, and we'll come back to OBS, the two-year-old in training sales season. It's a big mix, actually. And in addition to the American Pharaohs and the Tappets and so forth, the war fronts, there's some of the regional types. And you heard yesterday Kelly Breen mention Shaking It Up. And you look through, there's Daredevil and Kozan, who's a journeyman stud, right? No Nay Never had a zippy filly who's going to go through the ring early. It really is a mixed bag of headlining types, as well as some of the potentially emergent stallions. Yeah, they're all. It's got a little bit of everything. They're 100 for today, 107 out. So I was speculating on that. So little under 200 horses through the ring today. I appreciate Garrett getting a couple of minutes in. Look at it's the T, the D, and the N. Brian DiDonato and Steve Chirac from TDN. Morning, boys. We'll get, you know what? I'm going to slip them in. Maybe we'll get a seasonal preview from the TDN boys. How about that? Not a bad idea. I just heard from Sid. He's not going to get here until later this afternoon. I don't know. Is he coming for the sale, or is he coming for Craig Burnick's crawfish boil? We'll catch up on some other. I want to get some of the headlines in, and there's still more from the weekend we haven't done yet. But I did want to get kind of a combo visit in about Tacitus and about Hidden Scroll. So that was productive with Garrett O'Rourke. They're getting ready at Cheltenham to get going, and we're getting going here too. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You going to the party on Saturday? She asked, I said, I didn't know. See, ever since I saw you on the back of some guy's bicycle, well, I've been feeling kinda so-so. So girl, don't act so surprised, got that look in your light blue eyes. You can stop pretending. Yeah, I've been watching the movie all alone. To the story, I guess I'll never know. See, I was running.
We're back at the races, back to OBS, and I mentioned as we were getting away that Brian DiDonato and Steve Chirac came in as an entry for TDN, and they wandered through the lobby. At the same time, the novice hurdle at Cheltenham, I figured, well, it's going to end up being way long, but they had a false start, so we didn't. Figured we'd come back and just summarize it, but they're actually about halfway through. Case, do you want to bring up a little audio here on the opener at Cheltenham?
So they've gone through the halfway point in the Skybet Supreme Novices Hurdle and still very tightly grouped as Brandon Castle takes them towards the top of the hill to Classical Dream, who's breathing down his neck. Then El Dancer, and after these on the inside, Fakir du Derry with Angel's Breath right through on the inside. Out wide then is Grand Sensi. The white cap of Felix Deji is now beginning to check off rivals one by one, and he's being followed through by Vision Donner. Next to the field is Mr. Fisher, as now they begin to make the run down the hill, and all change in front. It's Ruby Walsh and Classical Dream who now take the lead. Al Dancer is there in second, and Felix Deji is now in third. Then out wide in fourth is Grand Sensi, followed then towards the inside by the Big Bite. The one who's in real trouble here is Angel's Breath. He's lost ground and he's struggling right on the inside as they come towards the third from home. Classical Dream with on the outside Felix Deji, and Al Dancer is right there between horses towards the inside. Vision Donner is now being ridden along. Now Aramon is beginning to stay on as they race down towards the second last, but it's Classical Dream and Ruby Walsh who are still in front. Classical Dream on the inside, Felix Deji only a neck away, over in second Al Dancer, and then Aramon, who's travelling well into the race now for Paul Townend. Around the outside, Thomas Darby is staying on for Richard Johnson as the field in the Supreme turn for home. Classical Dream out in front by two lengths, and he's got them all now riding in behind. Felix Deji is in second, Aramon is in third, Thomas Darby's in fourth, and Itchy Feet is staying on the outside. The final flight in the Supreme, and it's Classical Dream who's out and clear by five lengths. Thomas Darby giving chase in second, Itchy Feet is back in third, but as they race up towards the line, it will be an Irish winner in the Supreme. Another win in the race for Willie Mullins and for Ruby Walsh. It's Classical Dream who wins the Supreme. Thomas Darby in second, Itchy Feet in third, followed by Fakir du Derry and Felix Deji.
I guess you don't have to do a lot of handicapping at Cheltenham. You take Ruby Walsh, you take Willie Mullins, and how can you go wrong? And 5-1 to kick it off at Cheltenham. And, I mean, he drowned that group.
That was really impressive. I was kind of clocking his final eighth there in my head there, watching all these breezes the last couple of days, too. He looked like he was coming home pretty good.
What a terrific opportunity to get the opener in at Cheltenham. And we might get that, and then maybe on Friday we'll get the Gold Cup, and that'll bookend the coverage after Nick Luck's preview from yesterday. Say good morning to Steve Chirac and to Brian DiDonato from the TDN, and wall-to-wall coverage as always on the sales scene. What's the determinant as to the mix and match as to who, because it's very funny whenever there's a sale. I see, someday Jessica and sometimes, and Christy and you, and hey, it's like a shuffle of the deck.
it kind of rotates back and forth with some things. I try to focus more on the 2-year-old sales. Brian goes to a lot of the breeding stock sales as well. But
yeah, we all kind of have sales that we typically cover
that
we're used to, like
year in, year out.
I've done this sale for 5 years or whatever it is. So.
Well, and on that topic, we're going to have Tom Ventura at the top of the hour. You've seen the evolution of this facility.
What an amazing job they did. It's like being at a totally different place after I've been coming here 10, 15 years now. And just to see it yesterday or the day before, I didn't think I was in the same place. But you saw them kind of putting it together. It took a couple years for everything to get done. But this is hands down just a beautiful job they did here.
Yeah, no, it's become, it's on a par with any sales arena in the country.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt. And, they've also adapted with the, with the market conditions and the changes, and considering that topic, this sale has kind of flip flopped with April, and that's been a theme we've heard from a lot of buyers and even the consigners.
Even talking to Mark Cassie earlier in the week, he kind of hinted at the same thing, that March was always the big sale where all the big money horses were, and April was kind of the secondary, maybe later bloomers, but Now it's flip-flopping a little bit. People want a little bit more selection, more time with the horses as well for April. Mm-hmm. But they did open up the sale. It was a select sale for as long as I could remember. And about 4 years ago or so, they did open it up so you don't just have the select horses in here anymore. But there are still plenty of standout individuals. This is still a very good catalog.
And how much of that actually came from the shift from the Calder sale, the Fasig's longtime home for the, you know, for the, what is now the Gulfstream sale? And in my memory, that was in February, right?
Yes, that was always the first one.
Yes, and so then they would come here for that March sale. So that's why the March sale was on a par with, you know, it had that, that quality following up on what was the big sale. I was there. It's funny. I was there the day the Green Monkey sold, but I had to go back to the studio. And I went back to the studio because we were a 4-7 show back then. So I left. John Parada was still there, and he called in and said, with breaking news, he said, something just happened here you're never going to see again, and he was right. And we're still not sure we actually saw what they said we saw. Right. But that was a cool sale, and it, all it does is make you that much sadder about the demise of Calder, right, because it was a cool atmosphere, right, for that. This is an interesting kickoff then to the 2-year-old season, when 2 weeks from now we'll be at Gulfstream. But this is, I just noticed actually what a mix and match this is. It's got the war fronts, it's got Tappets, American Pharaohs, but then it's got those catch-all, you know, potentially emergent Florida sires, the Ocala Stud and Journeyman Stud, the Stallions of Tomorrow.
Within a couple of hips, I think it's not crazy to say you could see a horse sell for $5,000 and then maybe even $1 million within the same. Like, it's that top and bottom.
I think a lot of it has to do with everyone wants to be in April, and they kind of, it gets oversubscribed, and then horses who might not make it into April instead go here, or, you know, that's what they do. They're just...
And it depends, too. I think it also, I mean, everybody has got an inventory, particularly the pinhookers. They've got to spread them out, and they've got to try to plan ahead in case there's any issues that, you know, then prevents them from going through. I mean, the outs is 100 outs, 107 outs today, and so those horses are going to sell somewhere, even if they have to push, you know, to Timonium or to June here.
The June sale, yep.
And it's tough to know you're nominating so early to this sale that the horses really haven't been in training that long, so it's kind of tough to know what you have at that point.
From that standpoint, does that give, I would suppose, the quickish, sprinty types an edge, because they're the ones who are going to flash the sharp eighth of the mile times? I mean, you're not going to get, you know, a kind of a bigger, lumbering, two-turn type. He might be advanced physically, but he still might be half a horse in terms of his early development.
People are still looking for the two-turn horses. I think you'll see with the Tappet today, there's Into Mischief, too, that they just look like big, long-striding, classic-type horses. And if they... I don't think they're going to be as strict on them. You're not looking for those guys to go 9-4 or 9-3. If you get a good 10-1, 10-2, and people like what they see physically, and you have a nice page underneath you, I think those horses are still going to kind of get the people that are chasing after the classic-type horses in here. But you're going to have, like you're saying, the competitive edges out there just look like little rocket ships, and I think they're going to be super popular if you're looking for a win early 2-year-old. They all breezed fast, and if people are looking for sprinters or early 2-year-olds, I think you'll see a lot of horses like that as well.
Who else do you like on that front? Competitive Edge is an interesting name.
Yeah, no, I feel like a lot of people do like him, but they just look like they're very fast and very early. Obviously, if you're going to start talking about freshman sires, American Pharaoh, it has to start with him. Mm-hmm. They're all very expensive. They're all very good-looking. They seem to be breezing well. And it's hard not to imagine them being extremely popular at this 2-day sale. Looks like there's a handful of pretty good ones here, too.
Who are your two?
There are
so
many freshman sires this year.
I know.
It's hard to even keep track. I saw a couple of Tabertures. I liked Breezing. I think they sold pretty well as weanlings, maybe quieted down a little as yearlings, but seemed to be breezing pretty well. Competitive Edge, like Steve said, is an interesting one. The Big Beast had the bullet.
I just talked about Alex Lieblong. Alex is going to buy all of them. So anybody that's on a big beast, I guarantee you, Lee Long is going to be bidding against you because I don't think of him as a collector, but he certainly wants to support his stallion.
Absolutely.
But he right from the Breeze show, he got a big buzz.
I think he had one. Was it 9-3? He had the fastest furlong of anybody, and that horse wasn't moving pretty well. Wasn't all out or anything. It didn't look like 9-3, which is always usually a good sign.
Who else? Give us some more. People love this. They love the first crop.
I'll give you another sleeper. How about Wicked Strong? He didn't really get the support at the yearling sales. I can't remember his average off the top of my head, but just looking through the catalog, they looked like a lot of them. Maybe 50,000 was the highest one I saw in here, but a couple of them breezed very, very well. I think there's a couple of very quick ones in here, but we'll see. I think he's kind of under the radar, but I think a couple of them may sell well here.
He certainly, one of the things, I'm looking at DRF's little season preview, and they've got the number of foals for each of the new crop stallions. And Wicked Strong certainly, had a robust enough first crop. 127 foals hit the ground. The Big Beast has got 67, which I asked this question of Becky Thomas yesterday. What's her goal with Sequel? And she says they'd like to get 100. They're going to have a prominent sire, and Big Beast was 67, but there was a crowded field in Florida for that particular season.
I think Chitu's a little interesting too. He had a couple that I liked breezing.
He's at Bridalwood.
Yep,
he's got 45 from his first crop.
And he was quick and early. I mean, I would think they'd be definitely on the early side.
Carpe Diem.
Yep. He's definitely interesting. There's one I like a lot of his on day one. Hip 68 breezed a really nice quarter in 21-1 of Philly. I think she's really going to be okay, but that was the one that stood out of Carpe Diem for me.
And he topped this sale or co-topped it, 5 years ago or so? So, he sold well here.
Well, and Bo Lane is one of our favorite people in the game, and he was basically raised Carpe Diem and predicted big things early, and then similarly it expects him to be successful. I heard, who was it yesterday, that Kelly Breen mentioned Constitution.
Okay. He's definitely had some good steam behind him at the yearling sales and has a lot of the right people talking about him. We'll see what he does now, but there's definitely some nice ones by him in here as well.
Yeah, there's a Constitution I really like on day two. I'm hoping Kelly's not on the horse because I might make a bid or two, so let's hope that's not the one he likes.
Well, talk about your group and how you're doing.
It's Franklin Ave Equine. We've got about, 7 in training right now. We've got 2 in New York with Leah Giarmati, and then 4 with Jason Barkley. We're going to get him some more, hopefully, at the 2-year-old sales. We buy horses at auction, claim, kind of do everything. Just hopefully, starting to build it up a little bit, have some success. So,
how can people find more information?
FranklinAveEquine.com.
There you go. All right, and snappy silks.
Thank you.
I'll take a picture. Actually, we'll put it up. You talk about the right people being on horses, and it's one of the things that over the years, originally with regular conversations with Glennie Kane Oakford, and as I was kind of learning where money gravitated, and when you particularly on the yearling market, and then most recently with this weanling to yearling pinhook market that came out of nowhere, that was just like, oh, why didn't somebody think of this before? we would, Glennie and I would kind of go through and note who was buying these first crop types. Mm. And when, when people you respect and people that have got a track record, when they're buying those weanlings and those yearlings, that's a major endorsement. And you don't have to be some confirmation expert. If you're just emerging and wading into this marketplace, you can follow the leaders and get a feel for where things are headed and who probably has a better than average chance of being successful.
Yeah, definitely. I remember at Saratoga, the New York bred sale, I was looking at some competitive edges, and every time I went to look at one, Mike Ryan was already looking at it.
Yeah, there you go.
So I was like, oh, I can't afford it now, but it must, the horse must be interesting.
Yeah. Hey, well, and you could go to the barns and shadow. I mean, basically just. I'm sure there's plenty of people that do that.
Mm-hmm. No, you definitely could learn a lot by just being here and seeing what's going on. If you're paying close enough attention, I feel like you pick up a lot without even realizing it. Just to walk through the backstretch, and if you happen to be looking at a horse and you see who else is calling the horse out, you're probably looking at something pretty good.
You know, one of the things that I would just anecdotally, because you know, Rick Hammerly was with us yesterday, and the situation, of course, in California, it feels like there were more than usual California horsemen were mm-hmm. were visiting and took the opportunity to slip over here. Mm-hmm. And, Phil D'Amato and Peter Miller. We saw Peter Ertin, John Sadler, Hollendorfer, of course, and et cetera. So I think, you know, I think maybe there's a couple of extra heads that are. You know, looking at horses that, you know, that could drive the, you know, the top sellers.
Every year, more and more people show up to the sale. Even though we were saying April has kind of become the bigger thing now, you don't see many people sit this one out though either. Everybody's going to be here, and the right horses are going to go to the right homes for the right money. I don't think you're going to catch too many bargains with everybody in town here.
We keep hearing, and it's now become protracted, this middle market concerns, mm-hmm. and at what point, because everybody, you know, every quote, whether it's Boyd Browning or whether it's Jeff Russell or Tom Ventura and any of the sales people, they keep saying top of the market is established, it's certain, it's kind of locked in, and you're going to pay top dollar for the most glaring opportunities. But, you know, Brian, you're a good example. I mean, with the partnerships and with any number of teams that have emerged, budget wise, you know, getting a strength to push down from the top end. What has to happen, and how is that going to play out? I mean, when we keep saying, keep anticipating, what trips that switch?
I think it's kind of a larger economic trend just in the world, and that's kind of how we're going. You know, the wealthiest people in the world are buying the best horses, and they're kind of doing the best in general. There's definitely a lot of value to be had. I don't know that the difference between those really top end horses and the next level is as significant as the market seems to think it is sometimes. So, I mean, I think for smaller buyers, it's obviously an opportunity.
And that's my thought. I mean, all you have to do is see what Gary Capuano did with this $11,000, right. Yep. that he turned into, basically a million-dollar home run. Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the TDN through the years since I've been there, one thing that always caught my eye, when you look at the graded stakes charts, we have the sales in parentheses. It's not necessarily always the horses that sold for $1 million, $2 million, $3 million. You'll see the $20,000 or $50,000 on a lot of them. It doesn't spending a lot of money doesn't guarantee anything in this game. And I think you still, obviously, if you have the money, people want the best horses or what are perceived as the best horses at the time. But there's plenty of horses that could sell for 50 or under. Look at the horse you just mentioned. You see it all the time. It's not impossible.
There was a Breeders' Cup that I, because we would always do, in addition to the racing recap and the betting recap, we would do the pedigree recaps. And there was one Breeders' Cup. One of the years that when Wise Dan won and was Horse of the Year, and he was by Wiseman's Ferry. Fort Larned was by E. Dubai.
Yep.
There were nine winners, 11 winners, whatever number of Breeders' Cups, and there was maybe two high-profile pedigrees, stallions. It was actually somewhat comical to go through it. And I remember, I think probably by that time, Sid Fernando was doing the recaps with us, and we just, it just kind of said, you know, not that it was a waste to to spend six figures and beyond, but you know, the old good horse comes from anywhere theory plays out plenty of times.
That's also a ton of fun when you look at the Derby field every year. And, yes, you might have a couple of those sales toppers, but then you're going to have some good success story from out of nowhere with some cheap horse that gets in there and may even have like a really
good gun of era or something like that. Yeah.
Seems to happen.
And I know people bring it up. Has there been a ratio analysis of graded stake wins to purchase price, to sale purchase price, that kind of thing?
I think it's probably out there somewhere. I couldn't tell you exactly where, but I think it's out there somewhere.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll have to look and see what that kind of equals out to. But I think the number would surprise you more than you would think.
That would be my. And, you know, then, of course, you know, the homebred marketplace is. You know, you talk about the Derby. Invariably, there's 5-6 homebreds in the Derby, and you know that part of it we kind of particularly enjoy. Just talk to Garrett O'Rourke, you know, and here's Judmont that stands to put 2 homebreds in the Derby themselves, with Tacitus and with Hidden Scroll. On that topic, let's get. I know that the T.D. Thornton is anointed with the top 12 work, but let's get some early impressions here as we're knocking on the door of the 9 furlong races.
At first, I'd like to give T.D. Thornton a nice little shout-out for sticking with Code of Honor. He still had him in his top 5, I think, even before that last one, and he has really stayed the course. I hope he bet him as well, but I'm not sure if he cashed or not, but he did a good job kind of sticking the course, and now everybody's back on board, but he kind of was staying the course before everybody. It's still, as far as going through this whole crop still, it's still a little early. The opinions that I've had, I don't know if they're going to hold up yet, and I still want to see the next round of preps, I think, before I really fall in love with anybody. Bourbon War was the only horse that I almost bet in a future wager, but at 25-1 or 30-1 before he ran that big second, that was the horse that I was kind of on, but we'll kind of wait and see. I still want to see some more preps before getting really serious about who I like and love.
Yeah, that's kind of how I am. I've learned over the years that you don't want to get married to a horse too early, so I'm a free agent for now, I guess.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the futures, because I didn't get a chance yesterday. We launched right into a 3-hour whirlwind, and game winner and improbable, the 2 individual prices that closed on Sunday, both 6-1. The all others still holding fast, 9-2, and you can kind of understand that. You had the other double-digit types, or you know, between 10 and 20, Bourbon War 12-1, Code of Honor 14-1. That's not a bad price it's interesting that Code of Honor would have gone off a couple of points higher than Bourbon War. This is a phenomenon that just doesn't go away. The closing he was closing.
It's always the biggest trap. You think more distance mile and a quarter is going to help, and normally it doesn't. But
yeah, exactly. Well. That's the old the Derby to Belmont.
Right.
Oh, he was closing at the Derby. Good. He's going to close to be 7th in the Belmont. He's going to flatten out with a quarter of a mile to run.
Some of those prices, even that you're saying, for if you love game winner improbable, to take 6-1 on a horse this far out.
Like, right.
I loved Orb the year he won, but even at 5-1 day of, I thought I was a little crazy taking that low of a price on, even though you love him, for 20 horse field day of, at least you know you're in the gate. This, you're taking it how many months out? It's just, I don't know how you do that.
How about Roadster, who's only won an allowance race? He's 16-1.
Right.
That's a little aggressive. 12-1 on War of Will. We had Marcassi yesterday. All systems go there. Instagram 17-1. Is that for the Derby or for the Bayshore? We'll see. Actually, you know what? I mean, he kept pedaling, and
it's a hot pace.
But I don't know. To me, that whole field, I thought, was all one turn horses. Mm.
That's what it looked like, and it's just such odd placement with how the Triple Crown series goes through New York now. If you go longer, and now they're cutting back, and then you go back longer for the Wood. It's a little confusing, but at least you have a place for these one-turn types maybe to run in one of these and see if they go on. I'm sure Haikiel will go try the Wood now and stretch out and see if he could go 9 furlongs. War Will, as you were just saying before, you mentioned him and Mark Cassion. The thing that you have to really love about him is he's got that high cruising tactical speed that seems to win the Derby every year now. Mm. I don't know if he's fast enough or good enough yet. I want to see it one more time from him, but he could get himself in that dream spot that seems to win the Derby every year now, and he obviously has a ton of talent as well.
If he does any, I mean, if there's any growing that's going to happen between, I was there for Risen Star, between Risen Star and Derby, right. it'll be scary because he is imposing. That paddock for the Risen Star, I mean, he just looks like a prize fighter with the bowed neck and the kind of the hulking shoulders. Yeah. You could actually physically see the intimidation factor. His presence in that paddock was felt, and that tells you a lot. And you don't have other connect. I said this at the time. You don't see other connections, you know, gawking and whispering right. about a foe like that. Yeah. Yeah, too often. So we'll see. I mean, he, from a physical standpoint, he's the goods. I was busy on Sunday, and I was here. We were getting lay of the land for broadcasting. We were testing spots, and I didn't. And I kind of forgot at 6 and 6:30, but there really isn't a super value. 59-1 on tax. Saw Danny Gargan come in earlier, and that's what you do want, a horse out of sight, out of mind, right?
That race too. That race came up very fast. He seems to be training well too. I mean, those are the, if you're going to play the future wager, that's the kind of horse you want to get. You want something like that. And the horse, obviously, if he wins the Wood, he'll be one of the choices. So I mean, you're definitely getting value if you like him. I mean, obviously, but great value.
Blaine Wright's horse is an absolute mystery animal, and another twist of fate is going to get his dirt try, and so we'll look to him at Sunland. And then on the girls' side, all others, 5-1, 7-1 for Jaywalk, people forgiving her comeback race, 9-2 for Bellafina. She's going to have to, I think she's going to just train up to the Santa Anita Oaks, right? Okay. She's just going to... Yeah,
that sounds right.
That's I think what I saw. Other than that, it's funny that Jeltrin. What exactly was wrong with that Devona Dale? Right. She's 62-1, and that's a little may be a bit of a mistake. I didn't get a chance to look at the fillies, and the fillies has been my best score. That's the one I include. Betty was and it's a funny story because Tina and I were driving back on Sunday, and I opened up my account, and there was a bunch of money that hadn't been there late on Derby Day. Right. I said, "What is this?" And so then I go to my bets, and it's like, "Oh my God!
About the future
I bet Betty. Who knew?" Yeah. So that's what it is. You've got to love it. Well, guys, I really appreciate this, and we appreciate the TDN coverage, which is just outstanding and goes beyond the headlines and the connections and the story behind the way the horses came to be and who worked on them. And those are the stories we love to tell, too. So I appreciate it, as always.
Thank you.
And the addresses, make sure everybody knows to be following you guys.
Steve Chirac, TDN on Twitter.
B.D. Donato, TDN.
And how's your brother?
Everything's good. He's doing well out and doing some real estate stuff now. Everything's good.
Cool.
Yeah.
Jersey or where? Where is he?
He's on Long Island.
Okay.
Yep.
Say hello.
Will do.
All right. And he probably still gets...
He's still keeping a close eye on
I'm sure he is.
Yeah.
I'm sure he is. Mike Chirac. I love it. And, guys, this was great. The TDN, folks, every day. And you really should be keeping tabs right now because with Cheltenham going on and with... we had Super Saturday and we've got World Cup at the end of the month. So lots going on at thetdn.com. Let's take a break. Top of the hour. We're going to have Tom Ventura sit in as we get closer to the start of the 2-year-old in training sales season here at OBS.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. the Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breads on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.